Welcome, everybody, to ICT on PNC. This is our periodic podcast where we give you updates from the Insurance Council of Texas and the issues that are going on and topics that may be of interest to the PNC property and casualty and insurance industry here in Texas. Our series lately has focused on the legislature and the bills that may impact the PNC industry, insurance. We've talked, kind of given an overview of what the legislative process looks like. We've talked about some auto bills, and today is TWIA, the Texas Wind Insurance Association. And basically what we're going to do is go through some of the bills that are being proposed, talking about the funding, how TWIA should look going forward, and how it was supposed to be set up in the beginning. And today, as usual, we have Albert Betts, Executive Director of the Insurance Council of Texas, and Angie Cervantes, who is the Government Affairs Manager for the Insurance Council of Texas. And they've been paying close attention to the legislative session as the bills have been proposed, have started to make their way through committees, and ultimately whether or not they're voted on by the House, the Senate, and approved by the governor. I hope I got all of my civics order correct of how things happen. Albert, Angie, welcome once again. I'm just going to go ahead and hand it over to you guys, and you guys can start the conversation on our topics of TWIA. But first, I do want to mention, not only do we have podcasts, we also have webinars that are monthly for our members and non-members. You can join in. And to check out our website, insurancecouncil.org. We have an event calendar there that mentions all of our webinars, other meetings that may be of industry focus, but most importantly, the PNC Insurance Symposium that ICT will be putting on in July. And we're having that in Dallas this year, July 12th through the 14th. Albert, Angie, welcome to ICT on PNC. And go ahead and take it away and talk TWIA.
Well, thank you, Rich. We are glad to be here, as you put it, as usual, to talk about Texas and the Texas legislature, at least this time of year. I think your civics grade is approaching an A. We might need to drill down on a few topics, but thanks for that introduction of us. It's and I know we throw that acronym around a lot, Angie, assuming everybody knows what that means, but it's the Texas Windstorm Insurance Association, which is the residual market for wind and hurricane coverage on the Texas coast in 14 Texas coastal counties and a portion of eastern Harris County. So TWIA's talked about a lot. It's politically, Angie, it's probably the hot potato at times of property and casualty insurance.
I think probably as long as I've been around or exposed to the PNC industry, and for sure you and before us and will be continuing after us, I'm sure.
It will be here long. Well, let's put it this way. I've told you before, I was warned when I started working with it outside of state government that the person who told me this said, I'll be retired, you'll still be talking about it. And when you retire, they'll still be talking about it. So TWIA has existed for 52 years. It was created back in 1971. As a solution for those who could not find wind and hurricane coverage on the coast. So you're right. It is probably one or two in terms of importance, in terms of topics during any legislative session on insurance. And so this session, a little different. TWIA has not dominated, as we've said in our previous podcast, it's been ESG discussions and auto insurance discussion, but TWIA is still up there. So let's talk a bit today about what's happening legislatively with the Windstorm program, some of the concerns that the bills are attempting to address, and then some of the different ways the bills are approaching some of the issues with TWIA. It is TWIA, I don't even know what to say. Let's start with TWIA and its funding, which typically ends up being the major point of discussion, dispute between sessions. Let me back up a little bit here. Between sessions, almost every year, Angie, the issue is about rates and what is a fair rate within TWIA for its policyholders. And a little background even on that, TWIA's rates, or TWIA itself, is not funded like a traditional insurance company. TWIA is funded by its premiums. It's funded by a system set up to sell public securities. It's a debt-funded program, and then funded by assessments on companies, property and casualty companies doing business here in Texas. Those assessments are up to $1 billion. And then on top of that, it's then funded by reinsurance that they purchase, TWIA purchases each year to fund them, at least in the last few years, at a 1 in 100 PML level. So TWIA is a little different. It's not like any traditional private carrier in terms of reserves and investments and surplus. It's unique. That's probably the best.
I think that's an important point. Yeah, that's an important point, that it's unique in its structure. And then, which I think then ties into the political aspect, it's also unique in that it's an insurer of last resort, but it's not a state agency. It's it doesn't get general revenue. And so its funding structure, it's complicated. It's an interesting mix, I guess you could say.
Complicated is one way of putting it. You're right. It is a, even at the public securities funding level, it is a series of classes, class one, class two, class three. Mixed in there is a series of class one, class two, class three member assessments. So we don't have a target. If I try to describe it, I think it'll confuse everybody listening. So short version is somewhere in there, TWIA through its whatever funds it has available, plus the sale of bonds, will come up with $1 billion to pay losses. The industry will come up with $1 billion through assessments against companies. And by the way, those assessments aren't recoupable through surcharges or premium tax credits, and then the reinsurance program. So the background, the funding itself, we could probably do an hour on how we got here, because it has changed through multiple sessions of funding. At one point, member companies were subject to unlimited assessments, but those assessments could be taken or recouped as premium tax credits, and that was changed a few years ago. So TWIA has been through a lot. Thankfully, we have not in Texas had a hurricane since Harvey back in 2017, and so it's given TWIA a chance, an opportunity to at least build up a little bit of their reserve funding. But let's talk about what the ledge is looking at this session, at least what we thought coming in they would be looking at, and what's actually happened.
Right.
So I'll let you talk a bit about pre-session.
Pre-session, yes. I think that going into it, the industry itself had been having discussions on potential ways to fund TWIA. And we thought that funding would be a big thing. As Albert said during the interim, of course, rates are always the topic. But from the industry point of view, funding is just really something that we wanted to look at, because as Albert was talking about the bonds and the different levels, TWIA really, their current funding relies on debt. So we have been very lucky that we have not had a hurricane, and that there is some reserves building up. But their current funding relies on debt, and they have to pay interest on that. And so it puts pressure on everything. So during the interim, we were working, and the trade groups were working, and there was lots of meetings being had on what could be a different potential solution to funding TWIA that would not rely on so heavily on debt, something more sustainable.
Correct. And that debt, it's a quick background on that, even to sell those securities, it costs TWIA $8 to $10 million each time they have to issue one. And so it's costly. I think the interest rate, or at least the payback rate on the debt when they secured those years ago, was 8.25%, would probably be higher today if they had to do that. So short version was just TWIA had a funding system that actually cost them quite a bit. Of money. So we thought there could be some opportunity to, you know, find some solutions to that, find different ways to fund TWIA. I think key to that was protecting, or at least making sure, the industry's contingent commitment did not go above the current $1 billion level. And against that, the pressure of not, at least some coastal representatives and groups, not to increase rates for TWIA. So coming into session, I think the thought was find a way that maybe get some funding from the state. You know, we had a huge surplus heading into the session. Perhaps some of that money could be committed to help TWIA build up its funding reserves. Or looking at other ways to even consider some sort of statewide contingent surcharge, which would be on property policies and would be at either a percentage per policy or some flat dollar amount. I think the thought was some percentage per policy, which would not be a significant dollar amount if you spread that dollar amount total across the state. But obviously, politically, as you could imagine, if you're not sitting on the coast, you're probably asking why pay for that funding? And if you're sitting on the coast, you're saying, hey, this is a statewide issue, because if the coast is damaged or can't function economically, it's going to impact the rest of the state. And we heard a lot from officials down along the coast pointing out the economic impact and the economic support that the coast provides for the rest of the state of Texas through their port systems, through the tourism, through the industries that are located along the coast. So a lot of political interest in finding a solution. We have, like I said, been lucky that what's happened in Louisiana the last couple of years with two or three hurricanes going through, that they have not come here. But definitely needed to find some way to fix this. And so I know one of the thoughts, Andy, that you touched on was to have that state funding, but also have that contingency surcharge, but also have the industry's $1 billion assessment commitment still there. And then the reinsurance on top of that. And we don't know what's going to happen with it as we're speaking. I think the bill that proposes a funding structure like this, House Bill 1588, will be heard in the next couple of days or so. But it'll be interesting to see where that heads.
Yes, it will. The discussion will be had, and we'll hear from, as you said, the different sides. I think it is it's complicated, and you have to find a balance between the coastal and the inland. It will be interesting to see how that discussion plays out on Tuesday.
It will be. And we've actually got, I know we saw in the Appropriations Act bill, House Bill 1, which is the bill that says how the state will fund itself for the next 2 years. There was a contingency appropriation, I think back in Article 11, that referenced potentially a contingency appropriation of, I want to say $750 million, if I recall correctly, in that bill. But again, that's a contingency and it wasn't tied to any particular legislative decision. So we'll kind of see where that heads. But, you know, if that, for some reason, the concept of 1588 doesn't work or is not supported, I think, you know, obviously there will be an attempt to find other ways to help fund TWIA, give them some money, set up some, let's just say, some way that they can get some sort of support from the state, whether that's through a loan from the Rainy Day Fund or through some other state funding to allow them to at least build up their initial level of funding and, again, get rid of the debt structure that's in place right now. So it remains a wait-and-see proposition. There's some other ideas out there to fund TWIA or to change TWIA and its structure. And I'll let you talk about some of those details, Angie, but that ranges from changing the board makeup. I know there's some proposals to decrease the insurance company representation on that board. There's even a proposal that would have no, I guess it is a decrease, it would have no insurance companies on that board. But
a decrease to zero.
A decrease to zero. So if you remember your history lesson, it would literally be assessment without, I'll paraphrase here, assessment without representation, at least in one of the bills that's out there, Senate Bill 1217, if I have the number correct. So a lot to ponder. There's proposals to change the PML from 1 in 100 down to 1 in 50 years, which is interesting in and of itself. Admittedly, TWEA hadn't had a storm since, like I said, 2017, thankfully. But I know as we watch and keep track of hurricanes and tornadoes and everything else that's happening, the storms, when they come ashore, they're bigger now. And they're stronger, and the devastation just seems to be more in the last few years. So I don't know how much appetite there is.
And I think that one is pretty relevant too, just because of what was going on with TWEA and the TWEA board during the interim, and that's continuing, I guess, on through this month when they're having a meeting. We haven't even talked about assessment, the current funding structure, how it provides for assessments to member insurers for reinsurance purchased over the PML. And so during the interim, the board, or this last meeting, the board set a PML that was lower than what was recommended by their consultants that do the models, and then allowed for the purchase of reinsurance up to the higher number of the higher PML. So essentially, it's almost a floor, and then members would have to get assessed to pay for the difference. Am I explaining this correctly? Because it's complicated.
No, I think that's a good explanation. Yeah, it's from a law that passed back in 2019 that made companies responsible for, I'm using air quotes, excess reinsurance. So I think when that law passed, I know the industry was wondering what could that mean? And when would TWEA actually buy excess reinsurance above their 1 in 100? So yeah, I think you described it pretty accurately. It was a recommendation to go to one level for 1 in 100, not only by the Aon, their catastrophe modeler consultant, but also by their own actuarial and underwriting committee, which also recommended a 1 in 100 at, I believe, $5.2 billion, if I recall the number correctly. And so, yeah, it was interesting to watch the discussion and then the vote to adopt a 1 in 100 at a lower level, but then say, but buy reinsurance, or at least, as I understand the motion that came out, directed the staff and others to look at buying reinsurance at the 1 in 100 recommended level, which would have meant an additional $700 million of reinsurance that the industry would be responsible for paying for. And the mechanics of that, I probably get confusing to try to describe it. I think everyone's trying to figure out the mechanics of it. TWEA will not know the price of that reinsurance until June or late May. And then would there be an assessment on the industry to pay whatever that price difference is? How would it be priced? And if, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the discussion was TWEA will get a quote at the board approved 1 in 100 PML, and then get another quote for the additional $700 million in reinsurance. So,
correct. Yeah.
Okay.
So you have this. Yes, you have this playing out. And then I think that one of the bills that discusses this, Senate Bill 1217, that also has a lot of other components to it, does contemplate, I guess, that requiring TWEA to pick the lowest PML always. And then it's also the bill that requires lowering the PML. So that's something to watch, just to see how that plays out with the reinsurance statute and what happens with that.
Yeah, and the best part of 1217, besides, I'm sure to our listeners, our industry listeners, besides no board members from the insurance industry or the company side of it, is to then have assessments to pay for. It looks like anything above whatever the reinsurance level is. Also, the way the bill is written, it appears to make other losses subject to member assessment. So I know at some point, if there's a hearing on the bill, we'll clarify that, but that bill did seem to create a layer of unlimited assessments on insurance with companies.
That were subject to the CPI as well.
That's correct. Yeah, subject to the CPI at each level of assessment, because it looks like it kept class one, class two, class three assessments, which we referenced earlier. Subject those to CPI, so it's definitely going to be above $1 billion for that. And then unlimited to pay above whatever the reinsurance purchase amount is. So a lot of moving parts in that bill. Some other quick changes. It would move TWIA down to tier one areas on the coast, or tier two. And it would make the insurance commissioner responsible for selecting the TWIA general manager. And as the bill is written, the insurance commissioner could also remove the TWIA general manager. So a lot of structural changes there to TWIA, and big concern for the industry just from the standpoint of the unlimited assessments, because it is a cost of doing business here in Texas, that you have that money set aside to help pay storms after a loss. And I think the last assessment we had was after Harvey, and it was $372 million, as I recall. TWIA's total losses were at $1.8 billion. And remember Harvey, the industry paid $9 billion in other losses just from auto and home damage during that storm. So it's a big commitment by the industry, and I think something people need to keep in mind. And I say people, but obviously the public and legislature needs to be aware of, to understand. Not only does the industry write the majority of the wind and hurricane coverage on the coast, in addition to auto and other coverages, but we also have a substantial commitment to the coast financially beyond our own coverages and our own exposure. So it's here's a big deal, to put it politely. The coast and protecting the coast, and particularly in an era where we are, I'll say, worried about what's happening with storms and losses and severity of storms and the frequency of the hurricanes. It's something that the membership should definitely keep an eye on. There's a slew of other TWIA bills out there that do little tweaks to the board's governing structure. There's some TWIA biennial recommendations that are part of some bills that are going to be heard soon. I don't think there's, as I recall, anything controversial about TWIA's biennial recommendations.
No, I think they were, that some of them were biennial recommendations from last session, I think, even that just didn't make it all the way.
Okay. So I think the big one is really just the funding. The funding structure, the governing board, trying to keep that representation there. TWIA is up for a sunset review by the Sunset Commission in 2025, along with the Department of Insurance. And again, a term we throw around, sunset review, and civic lesson on sunset. Yeah. That does not mean sit on your back porch or patio and watch the sun go down. That is a good sunset review. This is completely different. So state agencies are subject to a review to see, I'm trying to, as I remember learning this years ago, to see if the agency should, quote, sunset, should be done away with. Now, it's rare that that happens. I happened to end up being involved in one of those when the agency was shut down and restarted. It wasn't my fault. I came in afterwards to help start the new organization. But it's a good process where agencies, you know, the Sunset Commission, which is composed of public members, House members, and Senate members, will review and determine, you know, is the agency fulfilling its purpose? Are there changes needed to the agency's authority, a governing statute? And so there'll be a lot of discussion heading into 2025 about SWIA, regardless of what happens, passes or doesn't pass this session.
And that will be, and that ultimately results in a bill. So next session, there'll be a big piece of legislation to, as Albert said, probably continue the Department of Insurance and TWIA and those. And so it does, having a big piece of legislation like that and negotiating all the parts, it does open it up to all sorts of ideas and things. So it'll be a big one. It'll be a big year, big session for insurance. Yeah.
It will be. So that doesn't mean wait and see what happens, but definitely even after this session, we'll have more opportunity to talk about TWIA. Every August when TWIA comes up for its rate filings, it has to file a rate or its rate decision, whether it's no change or to raise rates or lower rates. It has to file that by August 15th of each year. So we'll have that happen again. That's always a big back and forth about TWIA rates. To sum it up real quickly, the argument is generally focused on the notion that TWIA rates have gone up a couple of times in the last few years, but you've got to have a wind policy plus your home policy plus a flood policy, depending on what area you live in. So a lot of discussion about affordability. But I just think it's something our members hear about. You know, the TWIA assessment, real quick, here's another quick civic lesson. That $1 billion is a portion amongst the companies, depending upon their percentage of ridings here in the state. But that percentage of riding can be reduced if you write some coverage down in tier one, down in the TWIA area. So TWIA puts out a percentage of participation report, usually in the summer, as I recall. Mm-hmm. Each year that'll outline, for example, if Company A has 10% of the market under the calculation that TWIA uses or 14%, then you will pay 10 or 14 or 0.2 or 5%, or whatever it happens to be of that total assessment amount. So that's something also to be aware of and keep in mind. But we'll see how the session goes. We'll see if the notion of some sort of state funding, whatever form it comes out to, is feasible or going to pass, and the surcharge notion, if that can pass, or is that something that'll be tabled this session? We'll see where that heads as well. It is, I think we pointed out the surcharge is up to $1 billion, but also to point out that surcharge applies to, would apply, at least in the bill as written, to all fire and allied lines. Farm and ranch owners policies, residential property insurance, and the property insurance portion of commercial multi-peril policy. It does not apply to auto. I think that question came up quite often. So we'll see what happens to it. I think it's interesting that, you know, TWIA has gone where I've seen it go over the years from not getting a lot of attention, and then Ike happened. And then it started getting a lot more attention because of the risk and the exposure down the coast. But I know companies still write quite a bit. We're guesstimating at this point, we're trying to get updated numbers, but perhaps 55% of the wind and hail is written by the private market. So beyond the interest of funding TWIA, it's you know, the policies that we cover down along the coast. So political hot potato, a lot of moving parts. If you are an insurance nerd, TWIA is always of interest. There are multiple other states that have similar residual market programs who operate either, well, mostly through assessments for most states. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see where we end up. But I think that's, I could go on and on about TWIA, having done it for quite a while, but I think that's in a nutshell, kind of the big picture issue is what's the view of what's going on with TWIA this session, some of the concerns, some of the discussions, even in the interim, some of the ongoing discussions. So Angie, when I am long gone and retired and sitting in my assisted living home mumbling about TWIA, you will probably still be working on TWIA. So good luck to you whenever that happens.
Pat's just passing the torch on. Yes. No, you're right.
That's right. Yeah, I think it definitely will be something that continues on. And What's interesting about TWIA is that, you know, really doesn't impact the, you know, the majority of the state. It's just those 14 coastal counties. And so I think as citizens of Texas overall, we don't really think much about it, but it is something that's, you know, truly important to the coastal communities. But with that, you know, we've kind of talked about, you know, this mix of the private insurance, you know, private companies, the insurance industry, and TWIA, and you know, I don't know, maybe touch on that a little bit more about how much the state or the private insurance market actually covers the state, the coastal areas.
Well, as we mentioned, the private market writes the majority of the wind and hail coverage of what TWIA can cover. Along the coast, it depends on what county you're in, we're sometimes 2-1 in terms of being the majority rider in that particular county. And I think you're right, Rich, people don't think about TWIA if you don't live on the coast. And even if you're on the coast, you forget sometimes or don't think about that the private market is there in writing insurance coverage. And I know when I listen to the TWIA discussion, it's often talked about as TWIA is the only option down the coast. It is not. You actually have to get, here we go, getting into the weeds, but you have to get, to get TWIA coverage, you have to be declined two declinations from the private market.
Right.
To even get it. And so I know when we talk and do discussions on the coast, it's often a reminder there's companies here writing wind and hail coverage. You can get a policy here. I think, you know, the concern amongst the private market at times, Rich, is that to compete with TWIA, that the private market rates will not be as low as TWIA rates are, not because TWIA has better underwriting or can price it cheaper. TWIA often ends up pricing it cheaper because of the nature of how they set their rates and the politics they get involved with their rates.
It goes back to the not always operating the same way as an insurer with reserves and things like that. And I think that is because it's not a state agency, but especially the general public doesn't exactly know what it is. Sometimes it does get confused for maybe that it's supposed to be the cheaper option for people versus the only option as a residual market.
That's a good point, Angie. And if you listen to TWIA hearings, with the rate discussions and other hearings, you'll often hear the concept that TWIA should be cheaper. And TWIA needs to grow. Well, as a residual market for the insurance folks out there, you know, a residual market's not supposed to grow. It's actually supposed to shrink over time. And the private market should be the predominant market, whatever, whether it's residual auto or residual home, fare plans, TAPA or TWIA. And so TWIA sort of there's a different mindset at times about it, that it should be bigger. And it shouldn't be. We should be working so that people don't have to go to the residual market, that they can find coverage in the private market, but that coverage in the private market is going to be priced appropriately based on the risk and the underwriting standards that the insurance companies have. So it's really, it's interesting to watch. Like I said, it's at times complicated because the rhetoric and the perception of TWIA is not that I shouldn't be in this. I should be over in the private market. The perception is exact opposite. That you need to keep TWIA prices low so that I can be in TWIA. And that's counterintuitive for, you know, how we think that a residual market should work. So a lot of work to do on TWIA. I know the industry has been, Angie said it, probably 3 years, I think when Angie started with us, we were already having discussions about how do we fund TWIA differently and how do we make it more sustainable and how do we make it work better. So those discussions will continue. And I think the private market will do what it can. And without, again, continuing too long, you know, we know we had last year some some insolvencies from some of the Florida companies who wrote some policies down along the coast. So that has also impacted TWIA because those companies had been involved in some of the depopulation efforts with TWIA. And now that those companies went under, well, those policies may end up back in TWIA. And so that's going to create additional pressure on TWIA with additional exposure. I think the last number we saw said TWIA had about $72 billion in exposure and had, correct me if I'm wrong, Angie, had a little over $200 million in their catastrophe reserve trust fund. So just, and that's, I'm not explaining everything that goes into the funding, but yes. If you just think about it in terms of there's $200 million plus sitting in their reserve fund.
About $187 million, $190, something like that, yeah.
And they take in about $400 million a year in premium, plus the number we threw out as their funding, 1 in 100 is about $5.2 billion, or at least proposed this year, to be about $5.2 billion. Well, think about that in relation to a $70-plus billion exposure. From a pure insurance, purely as an insurance person looking at that, that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. But from a residual market and how it operates here in Texas right now, that's what we have in place. So that's one reason it's a really big discussion. Everybody understands, you know, a couple of big storms through here. We don't know what happens and what the discussion would look like after.
Well, this was great discussion, very informative. I think it was pretty robust there to cram all that into 30 minutes. Albert, Angie, thank you so much again for all the information and the discussion. For additional information, we usually have some stuff up on our website, insurancecouncil.org. Albert, Angie, thank you very much. And as for some housekeeping, again, check out insurancecouncil.org for all of our upcoming webinars. We have things on wildfire. We have catastrophe modeling. And we'll probably do another one where we talk about issues like this that's going on in the legislature. So thank you so much for joining us. This was ICT on PNC. This has been a production of the Insurance Council of Texas, Austin, Texas. All rights reserved. Copyright 2023.